You're listening to Talking Hoosier Baseball, a podcast by fans from the iubase.com website for anyone wanting more info on Indiana University baseball. Today is Monday, April 8th, 2019. I'm Cassie Palmer, joined by Master of the RPI, Carl James, the creator and the creator of iubase.com, Josh Bennett. Chris Feeney is still traveling. We had hoped to have iubase.com writer Max Heath join us, but some last-minute classwork got in the way, and we are not about to let this podcast APR slip. It was an emotional week for Indiana's head coach Jeff Mercer and another roller coaster week for the Hoosier baseball team. Wednesday saw Coach Mercer's former team in Wright State come back to the BART and completely dominate the Hoosiers 15-4. Hoosier pitching issued 8 walks in the game.
Our inability to throw a fastball where we want to. So we don't throw fastballs where you want to. I mean, you look at their guys, and I know them because I recruited them. But Worsen comes out, it's 86-90, throws a fastball where he wants to both sides of the plate. Hawk comes in, throws a fastball. Now he's a little firmer. He's a talented arm. Fastball both sides of the plate where he wants to. And we didn't do that. And we don't do that. And then when we do that, we throw fastballs in the middle. And that's a real team. I mean, there's a lot of those guys on that team who play pro ball. And we have long careers. And so if you throw fastballs at 90 down the middle, they get hit just like everybody else does.
Next up was Penn State, another team with ties to Hoosier coaches.
I want to thank Coach Cooper at Penn State one more time. Everything that I am in baseball is because of him and my dad. He took me in when I was a transfer. He made me his own. He made me family. He loved me. He showed me how to be a leader. He showed me how to invest in the young men and to give of myself completely into people. And our staff does that. And that's all from Coach Cooper. Justin and I both learned that from him. He got me into coaching. He encouraged me. He showed me the ropes when I had a tough phone call to call or going through some tough times in coaching when I was young. He was always there for me. He got me jobs. He elevated me at every step. And I love him. And Penn State's very fortunate to have Coach Cooper. And that's a tough bunch of dudes over there, competitive, and you can tell they have a great culture. But I love Coach Cooper, and I want to make sure that he gets credit, because I wouldn't be here, and Justin and I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for him. So
the Hoosiers then started off the weekend with another low-scoring Friday loss, spoiling the second straight quality start from ace pitcher Pauly Milto.
He's the first true high RPM fastball guy that we've faced all year. And I wasn't upset with the way that we attacked him. We had a great plan going in. We had our work in the cage with the machines, the video work. It was a very well-organized plan, and we really did try to attack that plan. With a heavily left-handed lineup and the right-handed guys that we have, their swings are not built for that. You have to really be precise in how you attack that guy. And pulling down in the zone, and we tried. But the ball just rides up. It looks like it's at your belt, and it rides to your letters.
Storms in the forecast on Sunday prompted a Saturday doubleheader to conclude the series. This put IU in the unenviable position of needing to sweep a twin bill in order to get back on top in the standings and not suffer a home series loss. Well, it couldn't have been scripted any better. Now, if you've been listening to our podcast for a while, you might recall that during series previews, Chris often gives us famous people associated with a school to look out for. While we still haven't seen David Letterman make an appearance when Ball State plays the Hoosiers yet, an appearance almost as unlikely, unexpected, and newsworthy happened a bit before first pitch on Saturday. Former IU men's basketball head coach Bob Knight made his first public appearance on the IU campus since his dismissal almost 19 years ago. Knight was driven up to the press box by IU Director of Events John Bauer and took in most of the first game. And that game did not disappoint. The Hoosiers got a 3-run jack from Matt Lloyd, a quality start from Tanner Gordon, and Lloyd wrapped things up on the mound with a save. Knight wasn't the only surprise on the day. Tommy Summer made his first appearance back from injury, tossing two shutout innings late to earn the win. The nightcap was another hard-fought competitive game. Andrew Solfrank worked around trouble in the first with his fastball location to settle in with a curveball-heavy mix, which largely left Nittany Lion hitters frustrated to the tune of 13 strikeouts in 7 innings. Grant Sloan's heat in the eighth and another save in the same day by Lloyd closed the door on the series win. Oh, and Lloyd also had the game-winning hit, a 2-RBI single in the fifth. So, Josh, why don't you get us started with your Hoosier highlights?
Thanks, Cass. My Hoosier highlight for the week is going to be Justin Walker's defense at short. I know he hasn't had much playing time recently, but he came into the game late Friday night and immediately made an outstanding sliding backhanded play in the hole, then threw a strike to first to save at least two runs and keep the game close. He made another one almost identical to that one in one of the games on Saturday, and just a bunch of plays ranging right, left, coming in on balls. I really look solid on the defensive end. I know that can't be easy to stay sharp and keep a good attitude, but he answered the bell this weekend. So, Carl, what's your highlight for the week?
Well, during the first game of the doubleheader, I remember we were over on the first base side, and I remember looking at the bullpen, and there's a pitcher hanging over the bullpen when one of the Hoosier players got to a three ball count, and they're doing the everybody clap your hands, and there he is with his glove clapping his hands with the crowd. It was just like, huh, he's getting into it, and who is that, by the way? And I'm looking like, oh my. That's Tommy Summer. Is he just, is he just throwing? What's going on? And then he comes in, he throws two scoreless. That was a big highlight. I think he's going to be he's a much needed piece. Whether it's going to be continuing to be a key player out of the bullpen, or if he's going to eventually get back into a starting role, whatever that is, Tommy Summer is a nice breath of fresh air to this pitching staff. Cass, what's your highlight?
I'm going to go with Andrew Solfrank's pitching yesterday, or I guess on Saturday in the second game, because he got into a little bit of early trouble, but then he locked down and went seven innings. With Solfrank, you can usually tell if he has it or not, right? It's either he absolutely doesn't have it, or he is locked in and pitching great. So to see him kind of have a little bit of struggle early, but then bounce back from that in the same game was really, really good to see. So now it's time to give out the red belts. I had the fun task of picking them last week with Feeney out. So Josh gets it this week. Who earned belts this week, Josh?
All right. Thanks, Cass. I'll start with the Joey Donato Award this week. Sally was really impressive in game three with 13 strikeouts and only two walks in seven innings. But I've got to give it to Matt Lloyd for his two save performance on Saturday. Coming into that second game with absolutely no room for error with the series on the line, it was just big time. With the two saves this week, Matt also moves into second all-time in career Big Ten saves at IU and only trails Ryan Halstead by two. So congrats, Matt. For the Tony Butler Defensive Award, I mentioned Justin's play at short, and Grant Richardson made an amazing grab in foul territory down the right field line. But if you saw the Big Ten plays of the week that were posted earlier today, Matt Gorski's diving catch in center came in at number one. So I'm not going to argue with that one at all. It was spectacular. And not to mention, he also finished off a very rare 285 caught stealing. I'm sure it was planned, but a nice feather to the cap on that one. And then for the Alex Dickerson Award, I thought about going with Matt Lloyd for this one as well, and giving the Mats a sweep this week. But I'm going to go with Cole Barr for his go-ahead hit in the eighth inning in game two of the series. Up to that point, between games one and two, the Hoosiers had scored in only one of the 16 innings. If he doesn't get that hit there, we could have been looking at a series loss with one game still left on the day.
You've got mail.
Sorry, hit that early.
You're good. Or an extra inning game that could have really screwed with the bullpen. Man, we need Feeney back. Goodness sakes. It was a big hit that led to the Hoosiers capturing game two and eventually leading to a series win. So Cole's going to get that one. So to recap, Cole Barr gets the Alex Dickerson Award. Matt Gorski takes the Tony Butler Award, and Matt Lloyd brings home the Joey Donato Award for week eight. Hit it, Carl.
You got mail.
All right. It's mailbag time. So, Carl, we're going to get started with you. We had a late one come in from Aaron via email. And he said, obviously, Bob Knight returned for the first time since his firing to the game this weekend. You think he was surprised or aware at how far this program has come in the 19 years since he's left? From a Big Ten bottom feeder at Sembauer, drawing 100 people when he was fired, to Big Ten's most consistent team with 3,000 in a beautiful modern facility. Do you think that thought crossed Knight's mind Sunday or Saturday? Thanks, Aaron.
Well, thank you very much for the question, Aaron. And it's one that I had kind of thought about a little bit. I don't know. I would figure someone like Bob Knight is still very in tune with what's going on in college athletics, with the massive arms race in facilities across all sports. So I don't think it would be a huge surprise. You know, I'm sure there he heard some inkling of the 2013 College World Series team. You know, his association with Indiana University means he's probably heard a few things. But you know, that's just a complete guess on my hand. I would have to think he would be somewhat surprised and delighted with the facility and the quality of play. You know, they put on a good show for the game that he was there. And, you know, probably overall, though, it was an opportunity at the particular time. And I'm sure Bob Hamill was probably involved in that decision to what game, what event they were going to go to, one they could probably get into quietly but still be able to have press to be able to say, yeah, he was there, he did it, he came back to campus. So for our next question, this is from Carl. Cass, Carl asks, can you give a statistical breakdown of our offense versus Friday night starters, Saturday night, Sunday, and midweek starters?
Well, thank you for your question, Carl. And the numbers are kind of stark. And the first thing I'm going to say is poor, poor Pauly. He is going an average of 7 innings per game. And the whoever pitches on Friday is giving up under 3 runs per game, 2.5 of those earned. And the offense is putting up just over 4 runs per game. And that includes the 18 runs versus Canisius on that Friday night game. If you take that game out, it goes down to 2.4 runs, which means that despite giving up so few runs on the pitching side, they are actually giving up more runs than are scored on average on Fridays. And on Fridays, the Hoosier offense gets a run on average every 1.7 hits, which is actually still pretty decent. But with this team, it just doesn't work. When you look at Saturdays, that number goes down to 1.4. And on Sundays, the Hoosiers actually score a run statistically on every hit. It's kind of weird to think about when you start working in walks and extra base hits all together. It gets pretty interesting. I don't know that I've ever seen that be sub 1, but it's getting pretty close on Sundays. And midweeks, they're at 1.1. So on Fridays, they just don't hit as well. That's kind of to be expected. It's the Friday night starter. We've got our Pauly. They've got their version of Pauly. Runs are always going to be hard to come by. But one of the big differences is the number of walks drawn. This is, again, probably more about the quality of opposing pitchers on non-Fridays. But the Hoosiers are drawing just over 2 walks a game on Fridays. By the time you get to midweek, that goes up to almost 6. With incremental, gets a little bit better on Saturday, a little bit better on Sunday, good bit better on midweeks. Again, on midweeks, you're throwing untested guys. You're throwing guys who might work out of the bullpen. On the weekends, you're not necessarily throwing your guy with super duper low walk rate. And this caught me off guard a little bit, but the offense actually strikes out more on Saturdays and Sundays than it does on Fridays, to the tune of about 2 more strikeouts on Saturdays and Sundays. That surprised me a bit. I would expect midweeks to be a low strikeout, which they are. Kind of goes with the high walk rate. But to see that low strikeout rate on Friday surprised me when everyone else is throwing their Pauly Milto too. On a positive note for Fridays, the defense actually commits fewer errors per game. They essentially commit one error every other Friday. On Saturdays, that goes up to almost two per game, and midweeks are actually above two errors per game. And so, and midweeks are when you kind of where you play around with alignments and all of that, but still, that's a pretty big jump from Fridays to Sunday. So at least Pauly is only fighting the slow offense. He's not also fighting the questionable defense at times. So that is a good note for Fridays. So our next question comes from Lisa, and she said her question is for Josh. What's the difference between a changeup and a slider?
Okay, thanks for the question, Lisa. I wasn't a pitcher, and I could never hit a slider, so I'll do my best to answer this question. But the changeup basically mimics the fastball. You want the same arm speed and release, but you really want, you know, a big difference in speed, 10 miles an hour or so. This is accomplished by choking the ball back in your hand or palming it versus releasing it off of your fingertips like a fastball. So good ones not only fool the hitter by arriving slower than expected, but they also will dip, fall off horizontally, like a 12-6 curveball. Some guys also get really good side-to-side vertical movement where it kind of darts away from the right-handed hitter, from a right-handed pitcher. Example I could think of, the first pitcher we faced at Memphis this season, I was down behind him, and his was both dropping and darting away or fading. Now the slider is closer to a fastball velocity wise, you know, maybe 5 to 8 miles an hour. But it's effective because of vertical side to side movement that breaks opposite from the throwing arm side. And with it being slower than a fastball, and of course you got a different grip and release, that maximizes what the seams can alter. And plus it's a little bit slower, so the seams have more time to affect the flight of the ball. So just, so a right-handed pitcher throwing to a right-handed batter could throw what would appear to be a ball that's going to hit the outside corner out of the pitcher's hand, but then ends up well outside of the zone due to the vertical slide, or throw one that looks like it's going to hit the batter or jam him up and then dart at the last minute to hit the inside corner. So I hope that explained it well enough. That's what I've got. But thanks for the question, Lisa. And that's going to do it for this week's mailbag segment. So, Carl, can you tell us what's been happening in the Big Ten and with the RPI?
I wish I could, Josh. I wish I could. It's an interesting the Big Ten is very interesting. And I look at the bottom of the standings. Right now, the bottom teams in the standings are Illinois, Penn State, and Michigan State. This past weekend, Michigan State had a non-conference season against a very strong Indiana State team and took 2 out of 3. Illinois is still, even after their most recent series loss to Maryland, they are still 1-5 in the Big Ten, but they're still number 22 in the country. They have the best RPI among any Big Ten team. And Penn State, I mean, we looked at Penn State. We saw Penn State. That is a good quality team. They're 16-11 on the year. The RPI is a little weak, but this is one of the best starts that a Penn State baseball program has had in decades. And we saw what they could do on Friday with a Big Ten Pitcher of the Year award granted from that event. So that's the bottom of the conference right now. You go up to the top of the conference, you've got Michigan, who is 22-8 overall. They are number one if you go by in conference, go by percentage. And they, you know, beat Minnesota. You're just not sure, though. Minnesota is 11-16, but still has a decent RPI. The Michigan trip did not help them much, losing that, but you know, they're still 6-3 in the conference. They're still near the top of the conference. You know, Indiana and Nebraska, both looking very strong right now, but you know, Northwestern's at 4-2. They just had a big series win. Maryland is climbing back into it at 3-3 after beating, Illinois. There's no easy games in this series, in this league. And what's nice is that may make the strength of schedule within the league, the balance may not be as big a factor as it's been in past years, because there's just not the teams that are rolling over. I kind of thought Michigan State was going to be that, but if they were able to do that to Indiana State, I figure there's some teams that are going to run into some trouble when they go to face Michigan State. So I think we've got something very interesting. I'm hesitant to throw a bunch of numbers out there simply because I don't know that they really mean anything yet. And what's nice is this may really, really be decided on the field. The teams that execute, the teams that do the right things down the line, that win the close games, one of those teams will likely be the one to be crowned Big Ten champion. You know, obviously we're pulling for the Hoosiers to become that team. And at 7-2, they're off to a good start. Cass, what else do you have for us stats-wise this week?
So stats-wise, I took a little bit of a different turn on this because we are starting to get closer to meaningful numbers. Some of them are still a little small sample size to be really looking at. But we now kind of have enough in the win and loss columns to take a look at statistics in wins versus statistics in losses. And so the first thing I noticed was, and this may sound obvious, but the Hoosiers are scoring fewer runs in losses than in wins. That makes sense, but they're scoring three times as many runs in wins as they are in losses, which is unusual at this stage in the game. It tends to be a bit more balanced. Comparison on the pitching side, because I was trying to see, is it the offense that's struggling? Is it the pitching? Is it somewhere in between? And the pitching is giving up more in these losses as well. They're giving up about double the number of both earned and total runs in losses compared to wins, but that's still less than the three times fewer runs that the offense is scoring in losses. And when you go back to that number of hits it takes to bring in a run in wins, it's just over one. So going back to that really weird situation where you're getting a run for every hit. In losses, it's double that. It takes two hits to bring in a run. And that's kind of the difference. So we've seen that particularly on Fridays where you get one hit and you leave them. It's harder to string together those multiple hits in an inning to bring in a run. The strikeouts are also a good bit different. In wins, they're striking out 9 times. In losses, they're striking out 12. That can make a big difference. Even if you can get that one runner on and can bring them home with some productive outs, that's not happening with a strikeout. On the pitching side, giving up more walks in losses, which again makes sense. And the strike percentage was a little bit further off than I expected it to be. In wins, the pitchers are throwing about 63% of their pitches for strikes, which is a pretty decent number. For comparison, the MLB average in 2018 was 63.4%. So that's a pretty good number. In losses, it drops down to just below 60, which may not seem like a lot, but when you're looking at percentages on pitches, which for note's sake, I've got the team as having thrown a little over 4,300 pitches on the year. When you're starting to look at numbers that big, a 3% difference is kind of a lot. And so that's something to watch. When the team throws strikes, it tends to be a bit better. When they start to get wild and walk people and then walks lead to two-run home runs instead of solo shots. That's just something to notice, but I'd say really the big thing right now is to get the offense a little bit more consistent, particularly on those Friday nights. So, Josh, minor league baseball has now started up with lots of Hoosier alums taking the field. What do you have on the Hoosier alumni?
Yeah, thanks, Cass. Just want to say a big thank you to Pro Ball Hoosiers for giving us this update on former Hoosiers that are still playing ball. There are currently 15 players and two coaches that come from IU. Currently two on MLB rosters. Josh Fegley is catching with Oakland. He's batting 300. And with the home run yesterday, he became the sixth Hoosier with 100 RBI for his career. And he also moved up to fourth in home runs and from IU. Kyle Schwarber's with the Cubs. He's hitting 250 with my notes down here said two home runs, but I saw he hit a Oppo Taco today, so he's got three now. Then we have three Hoosiers in at the AAA level. Aaron Sludgers is with the Durham Bulls, and that's in the Rays organization. Eric Dickerson is with the El Paso Chihuahuas, and that's the Padres organization. He's hitting 333 with two home runs in four games. And then Sammy Travis is at Pawtucket. He started up with the Sox and hit 286 in two games there, but he's hitting 300 in three games in Pawtucket. We have three former Hoosiers in AA. Ryan Halstead playing with the Richmond Flying Squirrels. Love that mascot. That's in the Giants organization. He's given up no runs in two innings pitched. Scott Efros is in the Cubs organization with the Tennessee Smokies. And Kyle Hart is with the Portland Sea Dogs. That's the Red Sox organization. He actually got the ball on their opening day and had 11 strikeouts. The Hoosiers have two in advanced A-ball. Craig Dietelo is Winston-Salem for the White Sox. He's hitting 385 in four games with a home run. And Caleb Berger, San Jose Giants, and has pitched three innings with no earned runs. We also have two in A-ball, and they're both at Kannapolis in the White Sox organization, and that's John Stever and Logan Sowers. We have two in extended spring training. Timmy Herron is with the Indians, and Luke Miller is with the Gulf Coast League Phillies. And then B.J. Sable is pitching independent ball for the Washington Wild Things. The two former Hoosiers in the coaching ranks are Doug DeVore. He's the hitting coach for the Florida Fire Frogs, which is in the Braves organization. And Will Nolden is in the Dodgers organization. So we wish good luck to all of them and look forward to tracking their progress. And we really thank Pro Ball Hoosiers for giving us all this stats and posting it almost daily. You know, I look forward to seeing those tweets all the time.
And I'm going to thank Scott Efros real quick for creating the situation where the group of us found out that double and triple A pitchers do in fact have at bats, because Scotty Efros has had one at bat so far this season. We did not know that that was a thing in the minor leagues.
Yep. So now it's time to look ahead to this week's upcoming slate of games. We're going to give that to you, Carl, this week. What can you tell us about that?
Okay, well, I'll start with the midweek matchup, a non-conference game against a conference opponent. The Purdue Boilermakers are coming to the BART on national television on FS1 at Wednesday at 7 p.m. Purdue is an interesting team this year. We know that they are very well coached. This is their third season under Mark Wasikowski, and this has been a storybook team over the last couple years. They've really gotten off to a rough start. I'm going to really focus on their midweek performance because that's when Indiana's going to play them. They're 1-4 in midweek so far. But a key thing to look at is they have yet to give up more than six runs in a midweek game. And given that a lot of Indiana's midweek games have been extreme high-scoring affairs, it's going to be very, very important for Indiana pitching to do well, but also for the hitters to be able to hit against a team in Purdue that is extremely pitching reliant. They're not going to score a ton of runs. They have very, very few, as last time I checked, only two home runs on the year. But they pitch overall very, very well. So this is an opportunity that the Hoosiers need to get their hitting shoes on and hit really well against a team that does really well in the midweeks as far as keeping runs off the board. Max did our preview, and we'll have that up on the site later this week for the Evansville series. Evansville is a fascinating team to look at because I know when I was doing my RPI model, and then when I saw that Evansville had been increased from 3-game series to a 4-game series, I was like, this was the worst record team of 2018 of any team on the 2019 schedule. They'd only won 11 games. But the thing is, boom, they have already massively surpassed that. Evansville is 17-10 on the year so far. They're 5-1 in the Missouri Valley Conference. This conference, by the way, is the number 8 conference in the country, directly behind the Big Ten. Evansville won a series against Dallas Baptist, which is a perennial power over the last few years in this league. This is the league that Indiana State is in. So you've got 5 teams with double-digit RPIs that are not in the 100s. This is a league full of top 100 RPI teams, and Evansville is on top. Also looking, this is a progression that Max really saw, the Friday and Saturday starters for Evansville. You can look at their overall lines, and you might not be too horribly impressed, but they are showing rapid improvement over the course of the season. So you've got your Friday guy, Adam Lucas. You've got your Saturday guy, Nathan Kroner. These guys struggled with command early in the season, but they have been figuring it out, and they're going to be a real test. Friday is going to be in Evansville. The rest of the series, it's going to be a doubleheader on Saturday, and the final game for a 4-game set on Sunday. They also obviously they're winning games, so they're hitting well as well. The bats to watch are going to be outfielder Nathan Reeder. He's started all the games. He's got a .337 batting average. They also have a sophomore in Tanner Craig, who was he leads the team in strikeouts. He's seen a lot of off speed. He's at a .291 average. He does have 3 bombs, as does Reeder. So this is going to be an interesting challenge. This is a really powerful league, and Evansville has been representing it well, and they have something to prove. Indiana State, who's a rival of theirs in the same league, has started out really good against the Big Ten up until this Michigan State series. These two leagues are obviously close together and competitive, and we've seen some very competitive and interesting games between Evansville and Indiana in the past, and this is going to be a very fun series. Josh, do you have any final thoughts for us this week?
I know Cass mentioned someone in the intro, but I just wanted to give a shout out to a guy who's probably underappreciated by most fans at the BART, and that's Director of Events John Bauer. Not only does he directly oversee what happens at the BART, but he also is responsible for men and women's soccer and swimming and diving. I'm sure some of those events he has hosted for those sports are more challenging than most for baseball, but what he did on Saturday was impressive in my opinion. Most of us fans just show up to the game and don't think about what all goes into it to making it happen, but this is what his day looked like on Saturday, and I'm sure I'm leaving out a lot of things. I know he gets meals for umpires and other things, escorts teams to buses, but he gets to juggle a doubleheader after it gets moved into one late Friday night. And he also had to set up security and logistics to foster one of the most notable events that's happened on campus in decades with the return of Bob Knight, and managed to do so without it leaking to the media. But probably the most impressive thing to me personally that I saw him running from the dugout to the clubhouse in a suit towards the middle of game two on Saturday. About 2 minutes later, he comes back out in his regular attire, putting his earbuds back in, and I managed to catch up to him a few innings later and asked, "Hey, what's the jacket and tie all about?" And he told me that he took his daughter to daughter-daddy dance. I'm like, really? So with all that's going on with this day that's just happened, you managed to take time to be there for your daughter and make memories with her. Hey, man, JB, all the red belts to you. So, Cass, any final thoughts before we wrap up tonight's show?
Yeah, one of the things that I was thinking about as I was looking at the stats and putting those together was and perusing Twitter a bit, looking at what's going to happen with this team when it gets fully healthy. You've got Tommy Sommer, who at least appears to be on the mend. He might not be ready to start yet, but you've got Pauly, Tanner, and Andrew, who are all throwing fantastically. Do you break that up to put Tommy back in the weekend rotation when Logan Kalitha gets back? I mean, you've got Elijah Dunham and Grant Richardson, who have played phenomenally, and you're not taking Matt Gorski out of the game in any way, shape, or form. And Wyatt has done pretty well behind the plate in the absence of Ryan. So it will be interesting to see how things shake up once this team gets fully healthy again. And that's just something to keep an eye on as we move closer to that week by week. But that will do it for this edition of Talking Hoosier Baseball. Read up on Indiana Baseball at iubase.com. Follow us on Twitter at CUAtTheBart and at IUBase17. Please leave a review on iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher. For Carl James, Chris Feeney, and Max Heath, who aren't able to be here, and Josh Bennett, I'm Cassie Palmer. See you at the BART.
I'm going back to Indiana now to see my baby in her evening gown.
Hey!